Welcome to Saving You is Killing Me, Loving Someone with an Addiction podcast. Loving someone with an addiction is a life of chaos. This podcast is to help you take back your power and build strength, hope, and restore peace in your life. We use the science and art of positive psychology, professionals in their field, along with personal stories of hope, resilience, and strength. We hope you can discover how the courage to focus on you can help put your life back together. When you are in a place of exhaustion, hopelessness, and emptiness, we are a community that knows all too well the turmoil that comes from loving someone with an addiction. We are here to help you compassionately struggle well. Hey there, Andrea Seidel here. I hope you're doing as good as can be. I always say I wish we were meeting under different circumstances, but I'm thrilled that we're here. I'm thrilled that you found us and thrilled that you're a part of this community, not because of what you're going through, but because we need support. When we go through loving someone with an addiction or losing someone to addiction, we need community. And that is one of the C's of the Saving You is Killing Me community. So I'm so happy that you found us. If you have been coming forever and listening, thank you so much for your valued support and just being a part of the community. And also, if you've written a review, thank you so much. I have to celebrate something here. We have over 200,000 downloads of this podcast. And that's just downloads. That's not streaming. So I have to say it's kind of like a bittersweet because I'm so happy that the message is getting out there about focusing on you and building your resilience. And we're here for you to support you. But I'm sort of also secretly saddened by the fact that there are so many people touched by addiction and the shadows of addiction are so dark and they're so hard to navigate and they can be. That is why I'm so grateful for you being here, for you being a loyal listener. And if you're brand new, welcome to the uplifting community that is all based on positive psychology and the science of human flourishing to help lift you up when we are going through the darkness of addiction, when we love someone with addiction so hard. This is all about you, for you. It's all about supporting you. But anyway, I just wanted to say, I have a brand new book that is available for pre-order, and it is called Tainted Love, Stay or Go. This book I created because everyone asked me for it in the community. I kind of did a poll of like, what would be the most support for you? And it was this. It was navigating that question. Should I stay or should I go? My love feels tainted. It's really, really hard. It's challenging. So now there is an amazing book that I've created. It's basically everything that all the tools that I used when I was in the muck. I wish I had a book, a package like this that could help walk me through. Beyond, I don't know about you, but oftentimes I get told that I got told in some of these support groups, like leave, like get out of the relationship or like run while you can. And like, I got that message, but I was kind of like, oh my gosh, no, like I don't want to, or I'm not there yet. Or like, it was so hard. And so I wanted to create a book that really did help you navigate the complexities of addiction, like navigating tough relationship decisions. And that's what this book is for. And it's for you just to help gain that clarity. I'm not just telling you to run. This is for you, whether you're staying, whether you're going, whether you're trying to find something in the middle or wherever you are, it helps to empower and enlighten you so that you can make your own informed decision. And so that's what the book is. So grab your pre-order. If you're listening now, the book is available on just Kindle pre-order. So that's a digital book, but it's going to be available for everybody in paperback and probably audio as well. It is coming out in August. Oh my gosh, I don't even know where August came from. April 4th. It's coming April 4th. So really soon, in 1 month, this book will be available for you. So grab your pre-order. I'm actually going to have some secret giveaways too. So make sure you take a screenshot of your pre-order because you're going to want that. Because I'm going to give you some incentive to pre-order and to also be a supporter of the book. Okay, so let's jump into today's episode. And this is really about, there's a whole section of this in this new book, Tainted Love, about this. So how do you tell someone that they're hurting you? It is the toughest conversation, right? Navigating tough conversations is so hard. It's like, how do you have that conversation that's not easy with our addicted loved one, right? Whether you're addressing maybe their someone's actions that are hurting you or actually confronting the issue of the struggle with addiction. It is so hard. And it is this idea of having the conversation is like, sometimes we just bury it inside. Sometimes we like, you know, we avoid the difficult conversations or like, but, or legitimately are trying to find out like, how do I tell this person what they're doing to me? How they're hurting me? How the impact of their addiction is having on my life. So what we want to do is acknowledge why these conversations are so difficult. That's the first step, right? It is so hard to have a conversation with someone who's struggling with addiction, first off, but I'm going to tell you about that after. But let's talk about why there might be some sort of, why we might find some of these conversations quite difficult. So sometimes it evokes a primal fear in us of confrontation. Sometimes we just don't want confrontation, so we avoid these difficult conversations or we're scared to have them. So fear shows up, right? And that might just be our inherent desire to avoid conflict. I know I was like that too. I was also, not to mention, I was up against someone who was up and down in emotion and very volatile. So that idea of confrontation really scared me. And I was usually met with an explosion. So that was very hard. Also, I anticipated defensiveness and maybe misunderstanding. And that anticipation of defensiveness and that anticipation of maybe someone misunderstanding our message, it can paralyze us. It can hold us back. That's what makes some of these conversations really difficult. It also is hard to articulate our feelings authentically. It's hard to communicate sometimes what's going on for us, especially if we're not totally sure of what is going on for us or what is going on in the relationship. It is so hard because we haven't maybe yet processed some of the emotions and the stress and the strain. So that might make it harder to have these difficult conversations. And then also we might fear that our perspective isn't going to be understood, or we might feel that, you know, that they're not going to understand what we're trying to say. And so that adds to that complexity and it adds to that, you know, why it is that we may be avoiding or that it's harder to have these conversations, right? It's essential to know why we are having these conflicts and why it's hard to have these difficult, oh my gosh, I almost lost my voice, difficult conversations. We might also be grappling with our doubts and basically unsure how we can convey our emotions effectively. We might fear that the consequences might be misunderstood or just dismissed altogether. So this might be holding us back, right? The fear of maybe not being heard or not being validated or understood. And let's face it, sometimes it's this vulnerability, right? We feel vulnerable exposing or trying to have a conversation about what it is that's important to us, what it is that we're feeling, what we're observing, and all these things. So that fear of confrontation and the uncertainty of being misunderstood, it really does create this barrier to what could be open and honest conversations and communication. So this shows us, right? Like it's telling someone that they're hurting us or even just having these tough conversations are hard, right? And these are some of the reasons why it's difficult. And now I have to say also when conversations, they can be even way, way more challenging when we're up against someone with addiction. So now you probably don't need me to tell you this. You're probably shaking your head going, yeah. And oh my goodness, because the impact of addiction, it really does affect the communication dynamic. So we could practice all nonviolent communication and strategies for effective communication and this and that, but addiction alters the whole fabric of interpersonal communication. It changes interactions so much. And you don't need me to tell you this because you've probably already noticed that. So basically, right, addiction creates this tangled web of denial. it creates defensiveness. It creates just a sense of mistrust and deviation and just manipulation. And so it 100% puts up a whole new dimension when it comes to communication. So it makes sense that, oh my gosh, how do we have these difficult conversations with the person struggling with addiction? They're totally entrenched, possibly in denial, and they're unable or unwilling to acknowledge the severity of their behavior. So if you're going to have a conversation about it, you're going to be met with a wall. You're going to be met with resistance potentially. And so this denial serves as like a protective shield that they have for themselves. And this shield, they basically like, you know, they're shielding them from the harsh realities of their actions. And they're like basically like going around and not taking like ownership for what's really going on. So they're deflecting any attempts at intervention, or they're protecting their addiction essentially. And so what happens is when we're up against this, it makes conversations even that much more difficult. So even if you were going to have a conversation about a difficult subject matter to begin with, that's hard. But if you are trying to communicate with someone in active addiction or has an addiction, like you are literally up against something that's very, very challenging. So addiction breeds defensiveness. It, like if individuals, they often feel attacked. They feel judged when they're like, when their behavior is being called into question. And I'm just saying all these because I want you to relate and understand like why it is that you might be having a challenge of telling someone like how they're hurting you or having these important conversations and why it's so challenging. So these conversations can often backfire because, and then sometimes it'll even create a bigger wedge between you and your addicted loved one because we might be triggering this person, right? This person struggling with addiction, it's hard. It's casting a shadow over all of our interactions. So as a result, communication becomes very hard. It can create a little bit of apprehension in us. It can create anxiety as well. And it also hinders that possibility of actually having meaningful dialogue, meaningful conversations, and even possible resolution. So if you're thinking, oh my God, it's like spinning wheels, you're getting nowhere with conversations. Okay, it makes sense because you're up against and you are dealing with addiction, which breeds a hostile terrain, right? And so you can have well-intentioned conversations, but they're going to backfire at times. And that it really does exasperate these conflicts that potentially could be there. And so what we want to do is recognize that we need to navigate this toughness, these rough waters, with self-compassion. And just, I want to acknowledge your courage and I want to acknowledge your resilience in this because it's so hard, right? It is so hard. And that's why, and one of the girls actually in the support group says, I actually Googled, like, how do you tell someone that they're hurting you? And it's so funny because that typical relationship or conversation advice, it doesn't necessarily work. And so conversations become even more challenging when addiction is involved. And there is such a huge, profound impact of addiction on our conversations. And it makes sense, right? You can see why it is that we may not want to engage in conversation and might have that apprehension. So again, it's breeding defensiveness in individuals. They might feel attacked. They're going to protect their addiction if their behavior is being called into question. All these things, they might take it as a personal attack. They might deflect it and push your buttons. This is a huge one, where they try to push your buttons so then you lose your cool and then you're the one that's, you know, yelling or maybe angry or like, you know, your emotions are getting the better of you. And then the subject matter, it's a strategy, right? That's gaslighting. It's a strategy of manipulation to turn the attention on you so then you are in the spotlight in question instead of their addiction. So you can see how there's so many intricacies in relation to having conversations, right? Your well-intentioned conversations can backfire. So as a result, this communication is hard. It can really bring apprehension and it can make us feel anxious even. And it actually holds us back from having meaningful conversations. So how do we navigate this? How do we go through this? So all I can say is self-compassion, self-compassion, self-compassion. Be really kind to yourself around this. And notice your courage, your courage to communicate, your courage to try and make things better, your courage to show up in a way that's authentic for you, that recognizes what it is that you're valuing, what is it that you need, and then trying to interact and communicate these to your partner or your loved one. And really, that is a sign of resilience. So I just want to first give you that wonderful blanket of love. I need to move this light because if you've been listening to podcasts lately, I hit this light with my hands every time I lift my hands up to talk. I talk with my hands. So it's a delicate balance when we are communicating with a loved one struggling with addiction. It's a balance of being assertive and calm as well as trying to be compassionate about what's going on and understanding what we're dealing with, right? It's a willingness to confront these uncomfortable truths that you're going through. And there's where the courage comes in, right? And we want to maintain that sense of self-compassion and understanding and calmness when we are going into these conversations, right? And we have to navigate, let's face it, a minefield. We are working like, how are they today? Is this a good time to interact with them? Are they high? Are they drunk? Are they blah, blah, blah? Like it's a minefield. It's like, are they coming down? Am I walking on eggshells here? So you can see the strain in this relationship and that dynamic of why it's hard to have conversations with our loved ones with an addiction. So, but we have to know by expressing our feelings, we're advocating for our well-being. We're expressing what's going on for us because we're trying to establish boundaries for ourselves. So this act of communication is so important for you. So I invite you to kind of shift your perspective and think, even if your message isn't met with love and understanding and respect and like reciprocity, like they understand and hear what you're saying. This communication is so important, even if it's just for you, even if it's just for you, for self-discovery, for processing emotion, for looking at your needs, looking at your values. So even if it's not met with love, I invite you to see effective communication as a way as a means of being empowered, as a means of being resilient. So even the act of communicating just for your own benefit, I want you to really see this as a wonderful tool for resilience and also for clarity in your relationship. And coming back to my book, see it as clarity. So if you know you're effectively communicating, but you're met with resistance, just see that as an observation, and it can help you with making tough relationship decisions as well. It can actually help you see the landscape of your relationship in a very honest way. Because if you're trying to get your needs met and you're looking at it from a perspective of like it needs to happen from someone else, that's disempowering. That can feel hopeless. So when we turn it back on, okay, what is it that I have control over to get my needs met, to respect my values, and then looking at what I have control over, it's so empowering. I love it, right? So the other thing is this whole piece about getting clarity on what you're observing in the situation, and then identifying how it's making you feel, and then assessing the alignment of your needs and your values. What is it that you're needing, you're valuing, what you want? And then the next step, this is all part of communication. The next step is taking action, right? So is it having a conversation with your addicted loved one? And then who cares how it's met? It's kind of like, okay, you can try, but you know, what is the expression? You can't change the stripes on a zebra, or you might be a scorpion is a scorpion when they're an active addiction. It's like up against a wall. You can't change them. So, but then what do you have control over? So part of the communication, I'm going to get into this, is so effective and amazing for you. And then you can determine your action steps. You can also determine any requests or boundaries that you need to set. And this can be so empowering. So you're taking back the reins on your life, even if the tough conversation that you have isn't met well, and or it's like, you know, it's like it's met with resistance or defensiveness, or, you know, at least you are navigating a tough conversation, but you're seeing it from a perspective of, hey, like I can use effective communication for my own benefit, regardless of how it's met. I can use this to help myself. So we're going to get into that. We're going to talk about how the first part of effective communication is for you and how it's empowering. And so let's go through that. Let's talk about that and just kind of delve into this. So one effective approach for navigating tough conversations is, and I love Marshall Rosenberg, his work on nonviolent communication, also called NVC, nonviolent communication. It really does focus on a whole process that is fostered in this place of self-compassion, understanding of yourself and your emotions, as well as being non-judgmental. So looking at things from a place where we can respond instead of react. It's like, this is what I'm observing without judgment, and this is how it makes me feel, without judging our emotions, but being honest with them. And then connecting those feelings. Like, so if you're feeling a certain way, it's like, well, what am I needing? My need for respect and calm environments is not being met. That's because I value respect and order and peaceful environments, right? So you can see how it's so powerful just to take a step back and apply this nonviolent communication for your own purpose. It's like, okay, here's the behavior I'm observing. This is how it's making me feel. And then just honestly getting authentic with yourself of how you're feeling. And then, okay, well, let's look at, what am I needing? What are the needs behind this feeling? And then what we can do is, this is the empowering part, is, are there any requests that I can make of other people? Are there any things, actions that I can take to empower myself to get my own needs met? That is gold, golden nuggets right there all around. Because once we have that realization, we're like, oh my gosh, like I have more control over this than I realize. That brings you such a sense of autonomy and just feeling like you have influence on your life. And it's amazing, right? It's amazing. We can make requests, but we can't change someone else. We can't force someone else to change, nor can we force someone else to behave to us in a certain way. We can't control someone else's behavior. So this method of communication does foster an environment that is quite hopeful. Even though we don't have control over someone else, at least we know we're doing our part to effectively communicate what's going on for us, what's true for us. And we do it in a way that's very non-reactive. It's very responsive, and it's very, very calm and feels really good. Now, this takes practice and skill, I have to say. Sometimes in the heat of the moment, oh my gosh, when our buttons are being pushed and this and that, it's like so hard. But what nonviolent communication does for us, it helps us to create a little space between what's going on, and then going inward, having some solitude and some time to reflect, as well as figure out effective ways to communicate that. So for those, you know, who love someone struggling with addiction, so you're probably whoever's on this, listening to this podcast, you know, these emotions can run high, right? When we're deeply affected by their actions, their behaviors of our addicted loved ones, it's like we can be triggered in so many ways. So first thing I want to offer you is permission to be human. Permission to be human. I remember being so angry where I'd have to come back in my red journal. I've got a red journal. I kept it. So I remember all the SHIT that I was put through. And so I go through it, and I would just like write, and I would just like get all my anger out. And then I would offer myself so much love around those emotions. It makes sense. This is ridiculous. You're definitely triggered here because it makes sense because you value respect, Andrea. And I'm talking in third person because this is how I would talk to myself in the journal. You value respect, Andrea. And that completely was disrespectful. It was mean on all levels. You don't deserve this. You are a loving, kind person. Are you kidding? Are you kidding? Are you kidding? I would journal like this. And it would get this out and help me process it. And so offering compassion and just processing this emotion. So what we do is we observe that we move to a place. Once you get past that heated, triggering, button pushing, we can move to a place is like, okay, let's look at this now, right? So nonviolent communication is about, it's a saving grace when it comes to all of this, because it's equipping us with the tools to calmly communicate what's going on for us in an effective way. So first, obviously, we have that wonderful method of like getting the anger out. Maybe we go run. Maybe we take a kickboxing class. Maybe we punch the air. Maybe we put on a music and we put up our middle finger and dance. Like whatever it is to process what the emotions that are going on, 100% do that. But honor those emotions and honor like, okay, well, what need is getting violated here? Or what do you value that is getting completely disrespected, that it's triggering you, causing you to have the emotions of anger, fear, right? Frustration, verklempt, whatever it is. It's so cool how just using this system of nonviolent communication can help us become aware of why it is we're having these emotions, why we're feeling the way we're feeling, and what's alive in us that's not getting met, or what is it that we value, what is it that we're needing to support what we value, and how can we take action on that? How can we communicate it? And so it's a really powerful tool, and it acts as a buffer almost, and it allows us to give us time and space to process the situation with clarity. It helps us connect to our emotions and needs. It's a way of honoring what's true for ourselves. And, sometimes this pause allows us to really process. So sometimes what I would do is in the situation, I would sit there and I'd act like a gray stone, and I become an observer. I observe the behavior that's going on. Even in my head, I'd be shaking going, oh my gosh, like, are you kidding me right now? I would say, okay, yeah. And so this nonviolent communication helped me in so many ways where I could just sit there and like not react and just like observe and notice what's going on from as objective as I could stay. I would just observe and go, okay, yeah. So he is leaving the house at 1:30 in the morning. And where is he going? And then he's not coming back. Like I would just like literally go through it and like try to stay observant. So I'm feeling absolutely abandoned. I'm feeling lonely. I'm feeling sad. I'm feeling frustrated because this keeps happening over and over again. And then I would offer myself compassion around it. No judgment, just like understanding. Like I would act like you would to a good friend, to myself, to help me process that. Then you realize when you know what you value, I value feeling safe in a relationship. I value predictability. I value love and attention, and I value just all the things that make me feel safe, secure, loved, respected. I value all those things. So this makes sense when someone leaves at any time that they can, disappears for a weekend, doesn't sleep with me in my bed, hides in the garage, all the things. Isn't it cool? It makes like, isn't that amazing how when you put them into their own little categories, it's like, oh my gosh, yes, it makes sense that I'm feeling this way. So then here's where you get honest with yourself. Here's where you say, So what am I needing? What am I needing? But the thing is, we don't have control over someone else. So how can I, you know, take action in my life to get my needs met? How can I then communicate potentially and make requests of other people to help get my needs met? And so it's really, really a powerful tool to walk yourself through it. And in the book, I elaborate on this and I give you even like an exercise and things like that too. But, you know, it's entirely normal to have your buttons pushed when you're dealing with a loved one who has an addiction. It is entirely normal for those buttons to be pushed. And having this nonviolent communication as a really remarkable tool to help you is another approach that you can take to help buy you a little bit of space and distance when navigating tough relationship conversations, and also just tough relationships, period, not even the conversations, just to really know what's going inside in here. I always said, if you could read my mind, what a tale my thoughts would tell. And that's actually one of the chapters in the book. It's like really like, it's amazing and empowering when we have this as a tool, right? And an example might be like, instead of saying, you know, you always prioritize drinking over spending time with me, right? You might express yourself in a really different way. So you might say something like, you always prioritize drinking over me or spending time with me. You may express instead, I feel lonely. I feel disconnected when you don't spend time with me. So our relationship means so much to me. And I'd like us to find a way to connect that works for both of us, right? So you can see how, but what happens is we don't have control over someone else. So that's one way to try and get our needs met, is trying to express what's going on for us, what's alive for us. And it's expressing it in such an honest way that's just observing what's going on and expressing the feeling and the need. And it's making a request of what you'd like for the future. So another way of doing this is like, first of all, getting clear on what it is that what's happening, and then you can state, you know, the feelings that are going on for you. So if it's met with respect, then that's great. But if it's not met with the respect, then you might change it to things like, you know, they're always prioritizing drinking over me. You might change it to, I feel lonely and disconnected, you know. And then you can offer yourself compassion around that. And then you might move it into a place like, what makes sense is our relationship means so much to me. So it makes sense that I feel lonely and disconnected when, you know, he goes off and drinks, when he leaves. And so you might start taking action towards yourself. Like, I'd like to find ways to get support. I like to find ways where I can feel like I'm not alone. And so you can see how you take the ownership of your actions of like, so not only are we're not just relying on someone else to get our needs met. It's like, okay, what can I do to get my own needs met for myself? And so you can see how effective communication is so important, first of all, to get clear for ourselves, to see honestly. And I always say it's like zooming out the lens. It's like looking at it from, what am I observing here? What behavior is going on here? Or what's true for me? What's going on? And just from objective point of view, it's like, here's what's happening. And here's what it, my emotions, this is what's coming up for me. This is how I'm feeling. And then I always put that piece of self-compassion in there. I had that piece of love and compassion, understanding at that point. And then also looking, so, okay, so, and then if you think about what it is that you value, then you understand why you're having those emotions. And that can help you with the compassion piece. So what is it that you value? And then moving into a place of needs. So like, what are you needing? And then really thinking about what it is that you need. And then how, what action or what requests can you make to help you get those needs met? Isn't that beautiful? I love that. So it's so important to acknowledge that addiction adds so many layers to the complexity of communication. So it's important for us to, yes, apply effective communication, and nonviolent communication would be a really great tool for that. But conversations may not always be met with the same level of respect and understanding that we hoped. So what we want to do is take proactive ways and steps so that we can express our needs, and we want to reclaim the power over our own life. And that's, as you know, about this whole community podcast, it's all about focusing on you so you can put your life back together and focusing on what we have control over. Yes, we can try to make requests and influence, but ultimately what we want to do is making sure that we're trying to take back autonomy and take back control in our life of what we do have control over, right? And as much as we can foster that clarity in our relationship for ourselves and our ability to communicate our needs and our ability to communicate what's going on for us in a way that isn't blaming and pointing fingers, and because it's already going to be defensive and met potentially with defensiveness. So you can see that, right? And by really thinking about, it's so empowering to understand why certain triggers are arising for us, why our buttons are being pushed, right? And then deciphering the emotion that they evoke when we are, our buttons are pushed, when we are triggered, what is going on for us, right? And then pinpointing what values and needs lie beneath all of that. So powerful, right? So what we want to do is just like delve into that. We want to get started with this nonviolent communication. So a good thing is just by number one, begin by making observations of the situations and try to do it as neutral as you can. Just kind of like, here's the facts. You know, what's that expression? Just the facts, just the facts. And like looking at the facts and like observation without judgment. I know it's so hard. I got to just add this. It's so hard not to add judgments. Like, what a loser. But if you can, try your best to just begin by making observations. This is what's going on. Right? Just, this is what's going on. This is what I'm noticing. This is like, you know, you're not eating dinners, like, you know, in your, you know, blah, blah, blah. Just observing. He's not eating dinner. Okay. So then identify the feelings about the situations. Like why you feel that way? What is it? Like, identify those feelings. What are you feeling? What's coming up for you? And search up all kinds of feelings. Like if you only know, like, you know, a certain amount of feelings, like happy, sad, you know, angry, try to look up lots of different feelings. There's so many. I have a whole feelings chart on my wall. And it's amazing because when you have a label or a name for something, you'll realize, wow, there's a lot of other feelings. Like I'm feeling bored even. Like that is one. So it's amazing how just like identify feelings, but really get honest with the feelings that's going on for you. And then consider your needs and values that are affected by this situation. So looking at it is so great because that adds that compassion piece. It's like, holy cow, no wonder, right? We should do like just a neutral one that's not about our addicted loved one that can help us walk through this. But then the fourth step, so we've got the begin observation, feelings, like identifying your feelings, and then consider your needs and values. Offer compassion, that's part of it. And then formulate a request or action to move forward. And so this is really amazing. So let's pretend, let's do another one. Let's do something as simple as I'm feeling low energy. The observation is I'm not drinking as much water as usual. So I'm noticing that I'm not drinking a lot of water lately. And what I'm noticing is my skin's not as nice and I'm eating more food because I don't know why, just no judgment, just eating more food. And so let's identify the feeling underneath that. So I feel tired. I feel frustrated with myself. I feel disappointed. And okay, so now let's consider the needs. So my needs, so first of all, I value good health. I value clean skin. I value enthusiasm and energy. I value self-regulation. Ooh, that's a good one. I totally value self-regulation. I think that's where the frustration comes in because I'm not really regulating myself with drinking the water. And then I feel frustrated and disappointed in myself. and then I feel the effects of low energy. And so what am I needing? What's my need behind this? So I really do have a need and a feel like I want to drink more water and on a regular basis. And I want to be able to self-regulate that. I need more self-regulation. There's a huge need below that. And then cool. So then from there, I'm able to move into like, what are my requests or what are my actions that are aligned with my needs and my values? So what I'm going to start doing and what I formulated an action plan is when I wake up, I have my big jug of water right beside my bed already. And I literally will sit up and the first thing I do is chug a lug. I chug a whole bunch of water. And so right off the bat, I'm getting so much water in for my day. And then what I do is I fill up, and what entices me, here's another action plan, is I love lemon and I love cucumber. So I'm going to put lemon and cucumber in my water. And so I hope this example is helping you, because I know it's like off in left field. It has nothing to do with addiction, but it's kind of refreshing. And so when you, I invite you to do this for yourself and practice on things that are not such a heated subject matter. And this will help us with difficult conversations later, because the more we practice this, the easier it is. So like, and we can walk through so many examples, like when we notice something is kind of, we're having a frustration around this, or, you know, we're having an intense emotion. It's like, okay, well, let's look at this. We can also do it in the positive. Like you can notice, like when you have joyful, when you feel the emotion of joy, observe what's going on around you and then notice how, what needs are being met? What do you value and why is it bringing you so much joy and happiness, right? And then what's the action is like, oh, more of that for me, please. Or let's keep integrating this into our life. And so you can see how nonviolent communication, there's only one little part of it that is involving the other person. And so much of it is for ourselves and empowering ourselves and doing things that we have control over. Yes, we're going to use this when we communicate it actually to our addicted loved one or to another person, then it helps us in that way too. And we don't have control over how it's met, unfortunately. But having tough conversations is never easy. So this is a wonderful tool that can help us in so many ways, just get honest with ourselves, connect to ourselves authentically with our needs and our values, be able to formulate requests of other people that are aligned with our needs and our values, and do it in a way that's quite calm. So I hope that this offered you support and help, like whether you're addressing, you know, someone else's actions of how they're hurting you, or by confronting a loved one struggling with addiction. The prospect of these discussions can feel really daunting. It can feel intimidating. But by acknowledging why, first of all, why these conversations might feel difficult or seem difficult, that's essential, right? So maybe we have fear of confrontation. Maybe we're anticipating defensiveness and worry, and maybe we're not going to be understood. So it's really important just to understand those layers, right? And the addiction, oh my gosh, it adds a whole nother layer that complicates things further and why it makes some of these conversations even more difficult. So my message to you then is, despite all of these challenges, it's so imperative for us to not bottle everything up and to communicate what it is that's going on for us, and allow it to not build in resentment and create more strain on the relationship and on us and our well-being. So by expressing our feelings, it advocates for our well-beings. By trying to get our needs met, it advocates our well-being, and also it helps us to establish boundaries, and it will foster resilience in us. So that's it. That's basically it. Nonviolent communication offers such an effective tool and approach to tough conversations. And just by focusing on our observations, our feelings, our needs, and requests without any sort of blame and shame and judgment on others or ourselves, and just for the purpose of our well-being and aligning our lives with really what matters most to us and benefiting us on so many levels. And so I hope that was helpful. I hope you got a lot out of it. I know it's a lot, and there's a whole chapter basically devoted to this, and actually in the boundary setting of how to communicate boundaries, how to have tough conversations, how that, and I basically, it's a Marshall Rosenberg calls this the language of love, and love for ourselves is so important to connect with that and what's important to us. So if you found this helpful, I really do encourage you to go and grab the pre-order, if you like, of Tainted Love, Stay or Go, Navigating Tough Relationship Decisions in Addiction. It's such a good book. It's going to be available on April 1st, not 1st, 4th. I keep messing up the dates on this book. It's so funny. April 4th is the date. And I would love for you to definitely grab your copy. And this will help you in so many ways, right? It's drawing from my personal experience, my personal journey of loving someone and losing someone to addiction. And this, I hope that this book will be just a beacon of light, of hope, of self-compassion, resilience training, and just really amazing strategies to help you navigate the tough relationship decisions of when relationships are touched by addiction. It's so normal relationship advice doesn't work. And so we just want to really have an understanding and gentle approach to this and compassionate approach. So that is what is in this book. I invite you to grab your pre-order for the Kindle or set a reminder on your calendar for April 4th. And this book will be available in paperback and audio will be coming as well. So thank you, everybody. I'm sending you a big blanket of compassion and love and hugs your way. And I hope you're having an amazing week. And we will talk to you soon. Thank you for listening. If you want additional support, you can head on over to our website at savingyouiskillingme.com, where we have a wonderful, supportive, compassionate community. We are here for you. You are not alone. We also have a private Facebook group and Instagram feed called Saving You Is Killing Me, Loving Someone with an Addiction. Be sure to subscribe here so you get the latest episodes. And, of course, share this with your community and your support groups or anyone that's going through this struggle so we can all work together to take our lives back and restore joy. Thank you so much for joining me, not only today, but week after week. Although I wish we were meeting under different circumstances, I'm so grateful that I get to show up for you and share these episodes so that we can go on this journey together. Until next week, sending hugs.